You're muted. Ellie, you're muted.
All right, welcome everybody. The mitzvah this week, well, before the mitzvah, the shir itself is sponsored by Henry. Lezecha Nishmas, his mother, Rachel Leah Bas Chaim Asher HaKohen, who, it's always great when somebody sponsors a shir, but it's even better when I know and respected the person. I knew Henry's mom for a long time. She's really a wonderful woman, so it's a zchus to be able to learn in her zchus. Okay, the mitzvah is, this is the last week that we're separated by Parshios, because my understanding is next week you do too, and then we'll be caught up. But for now, Parah Aduma is Chukas, that's my Parsha, but it's worth it. Okay, everybody knows, what I'd like to do is do some Lumdus at the beginning. There are some like really fundamental questions about Parah Aduma, and then do some philosophy, and hopefully the two ideas will come together in the end. I certainly hope so. Okay, everybody know, if you ask anybody, you know, what's a chok? So they'll tell you it's a mitzvah that we don't understand. Okay? And what's the world's most famous chok? Everybody knows it's Parah Aduma. Okay? We didn't make that up. Chazal were all over this thing, and we'll come to it in a bit, that, you know, Parah Aduma is the secret mitzvah that nobody understands. Okay? So the first question we want to ask and hopefully answer is, what is it that's so unique about Parah Aduma that led Chazal to identify it as, you know, the chok, you know, par excellence, the most famous chok? What is so unique about Parah Aduma? Okay? The second point, the second question, which is unrelated, but one that, you know, we're at the point in Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos where we kind of lose track of the narrative. I'll tell you. So, for example, if you're up to Chukas, so right after the story of Parah Aduma, Miriam dies and then Aaron dies. And we all know that that's the 40th year in the Midbar. And, you know, you ask yourself, wait, what did I just miss? Right? We just were in the second year, now in the 40th year. What happened with the narrative of the Parshios? Or, asked a better way, what's Parah Aduma doing after the Korach rebellion and before the death of Miriam and Aaron? Shouldn't Parah Aduma, you know, it strikes me as the kind of mitzvah that belongs in Vayikra. It has to do with Tuma and Tara. All those things, you know, belong in Vayikra. So this should be there also. Okay, but let's start with the psukim. And let's start with the, you know, just with the basics of the mitzvah. So I will pop up a sheet. Here we go. Everybody see it? Just wave your hand if you can see it. Thank you. So the parsha, my next week's parsha for you, this week for me, starts as follows. Vayidavar Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron le'mor, zot chukat ha-Torah. Right, by the way, those are like the words. Chukat ha-Torah. That's why, obviously, it's identified as a chok. The Torah says it as such. Asher tziva Hashem lemor, daber el b'nei Yisrael, v'yikhu eilecha fara aduma timima. You should take for me a perfect, you know, red cow, asher ein bamum, no blemish, asher lo ale ol, which also did never did any work. Unetatem otal el azar ha-kohen. You should give it to el azar ha-kohen. So first interesting thing, other than the fact that there's such a thing as red cows, Elazar Cohen was not the Cohen Gadol. His father Aaron was still alive. But there's a special mitzvah, the Parah Aduma, that it's done by the Skan Cohen Gadol, the assistant, and not the Cohen Gadol. Okay, almost certainly that's tied to the fact that the Parah Aduma is some form of kapara for the Chet HaEgel in which Aaron took part, but let's leave that, okay? Here's the more important part. Vahotzi ota el michutz la machane vishachat osa lefanav. Sorry, I'm just looking for something. Okay. So the Torah says you should take it michutz la machane. The Parah Aduma was not shechted or burned in the Beis HaMikdash or even in Yerushalayim or even any place on the Har HaBayis. It was michutz la machane, which is something we'll have to come back to because it's interesting. And then again, va'asaf ish tahor et efer hapara, v'hiniach michutz la machane b'makom tahor. Okay, and then somebody else, an ish tahor, leaves it outside of the camp in a pure place. And it is for the Jewish people a remembrance. Okay. So if you ask yourself, what's the mitzvah? We don't know anything. What's the mitzvah of Parah Aduma? So on the one hand, you know, what the Torah describes is the procedure via which a person who is Tmei Meis, meaning a person who is the ultimate in Tamei, he had physical contact or direct contact with a dead human body. The only way in which he can become Tahar again is if we do the process of Parah Aduma. And just as an aside, the reason why everybody is Tamei Bizman Hazeh is because we don't have any Afar Parah Aduma. So there's no way to purify people from their status of Tamei Meis, and we assume that we're all Tamei Meis either because we went to funerals or because we walked around. But either way, that's why, for example, to tie it to last week, you know, you don't give challah to a Kohen Bizman Hazeh because all Kohanim are assumed to be Tameim. Okay, but here's the problem. The problem is that there's no real mitzvah to become Tahar. There's nothing wrong with us being in the status of Tameh. It's true, we can't go to the Beis HaMikdash, but there's no real mitzvah to become Tahar. And even if there was, and there kind of is in the Rambam, that's not the mitzvah of Parah Aduma. In fact, the Rambam says, in source number 2, Sefer HaMitzvos Kuf Yud Gimel 113, says, He shetzivanu la'asot Parah Aduma. Strange. There's a mitzvah to make a Parah Aduma. Kidei sheyihiyeh afara mizuman l'mashe yitztarech elav l'taharat tumat meit. You have to make a Parah Aduma. By the way, the word la'asot, to make, is a strange word. Again, it's hard to make diyukim in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos because he wrote it in Arabic. Just to match it up with something we'll see in a minute, the Sefer HaChinuch in Source 11 says, Shenitztavu Yisrael lisrof para aduma, liyot afara muchan. So he basically copied the Rambam, but he changed to make a para aduma to the words to burn a para aduma. I mean, that's how you get the afar para aduma. That's how you get the ashes. So the Rambam says there's a mitzvah to make a para aduma, and he explains why. So that the ashes will be available to be mitaher, a person who's tamei meis. And he says, the pasuk says, Vayita ladat b'nei Yisrael l'mishmeret. Okay, it'll be a remembrance for b'nei Yisrael. So just to get the complete picture, the Rambam, a few mitzvahs previous, in 108, has a mitzvah that says, Shahorunu b'mishpatei mei nidah shi'taharu b'inyan echad v'itamu b'inyan acher. That is the actual mitzvah of sprinkling. Mei nidah is the water that has the ashes in it. That's how a person who is tamei meis becomes tahor. So the Rambam has a mitzvah that describes what Parah Aduma does. Then the question becomes, wait, so then why does the Rambam have another mitzvah? And exactly what is the mitzvah? So again, the answer the Rambam gives us, Kidei shihiyeh afara mizuman, so that we'll have the ashes that will be necessary to do, I would say, mitzvah number 108, which is being mitaher, somebody who's tamei meis. But doesn't that seem like a preparatory step? How does that become its own mitzvah when the Rambam himself makes it clear in Shoresh Yud? Again, the Rambam has 14 Shorashim principles or fundamental principles by which he decides whether something should count as a mitzvah or not. And if you look in source number 4, the 10th Shoresh, the Rambam makes clear that something that's a preparatory step to another mitzvah doesn't get counted. Let's see what the Rambam says. Source number 4, Hashoresh Ha'asiri, She'ein Ra'uy Limnot Ha'hakdamot, we do not count preparations, Ashahem L'tachlit Achat Mina Tachliot, whose sole function is to exist for one of the, you know, for one of the end points. Okay, and the Rambam says clearly, Pa'amim yavo'u tzivuyim ba'Torah. Sometimes you'll read a pasuk in the Torah, and it sounds like a command. But ein otamat tzivuyim heim ha-mitzvah, but it's not real. They're not the mitzvah. Aval heim hakdamot la'asiyat ha-mitzvah. They are preparatory steps to doing the mitzvah. Ki'ilu hu misaper, as if the Torah was giving us instructions. Eich ra'ui she'te'aseh ha-mitzvah ha-hi. The Torah is telling us how you do the mitzvah, but if the fact that the Torah is telling you how doesn't make each of those steps in and of itself a mitzvah. Example, Dimyon ze amru, v'lakachta solet. The Torah says, take fine flour, va'afita uta shtei mesrei chalot, and bake them, and then they will be lechem hapanim. Right? Make 12 chalot, and you'll put it on the shulchan. Says the Rambam, on the one hand, it says v'lakachta solet. That sounds like a command. But the Rambam says, there's not a separate mitzvah to take fine flour, just like there's not a separate mitzvah to bake it into challah. What is there? Ki hu eino ra'ui sheyimne l'kichat ha-solet mitzvah, va'asiyatam lechem mitzvah. Because taking the flour and baking it, that's not the mitzvah. Aval hanimna amnam hu amru, v'natata al ha-shulchan lechem panim lefanai tamid. Says the Rambam, no. The mitzvah is putting lechem hapanim on the shulchan in the Beit HaMikdash. The Torah just explained to us how it's done. First you take fine flour, then you bake it. But those are just preparatory steps. Similarly, it's a famous machlokes, but you know the Torah says chagasukot ta'aseh lecha, which maybe sounds like there's a mitzvah to build a sukkah. But we paskin, no, there isn't. We don't make a bracha when we build a sukkah. We paskin is a mitzvah to sit in a sukkah. Okay? So all that to come back to our point. If Para Aduma exists for the purpose of having ashes available to sprinkle on a Tameh person to make him Tahar, how in the world does the Rambam count that as a separate mitzvah? Isn't that an obvious violation of Shoresh Yud, which is counting a preparatory step as the end of the mitzvah? That's not what we're supposed to do. So everybody, or not everybody, thoughtful people all ask this question because it seems so obviously to be against the rules. And the answer must lie somewhere in the Rambam saying, Kidei shiye afara mizuman l'mashe yitzarech elav. That the purpose is to have its ashes be available for that which is necessary. Now you'll say, well, isn't that which is necessary the sprinkling on a Tameh person to make him Tahor? Maybe, maybe not. Consider the following. Look at source number 5. There's a Mishnah in Para. There's a Tosefta in Para. I quoted it from the Rashi because it's a little clearer in the Rashi. But you'll see there's something really, really interesting that the Mishnah tells us should be done with the Afar Para Aduma. If you didn't know any better, and I said to you, okay, you burn a Para Aduma, you take the ashes. By the way, I assume, you know, the ashes could work for a long, long time. The Mishnah tells us there's only been 9 Para Adumas in history. So, you know, it could last for a long time. So you take all the ashes. What do you do with them? I would assume, you know, you put them in some giant Tupperwares and you hide them someplace in the Beit HaMikdash. And whenever you need them, you know, there's like forms to fill out and there's people in charge and it's really, really special and really, really holy and really well taken care of. And then you use it. But Chazal, the Mishnah tells us otherwise. Source number 5. When the Pasuk says, go back up, right? V'asaf ishtar et eifar aparav v'hiniach michutz la'machane b'makom tahar. He should put it in a holy place outside of the machane. Where is that? Says the Mishnah as follows. Lishlosha chalakim mechalka. You divide the ashes, the afar para adum, into 3 different locations. Echad natan bahar hamishcha. One is placed on what they call har hamishcha, which we call har hazeitim. Plug to the sponsor. That's where Henry's mom is buried. Next. The next third is distributed to all of the groups of Kohanim who work in the Beit HaMikdash, ve'echad natan b'chel. And the last third you put in this office, b'chel is like an office on the Har HaBayis. Now Rashi explains. What is each one for? Zeh shel mishmarot, the third that's separated amongst the groups of Kohanim, haya chutz la'azara, was kept outside of the Beit HaMikdash, litol mimenu b'nei ha'ayarot, v'chol hatzrichim lehitaher. It was there basically for the usage of the people. Right? You came to the Beit HaMikdash, you needed to become tahar, they used those ashes. Second group, v'zeh shebahar ha'mishcha, kohanim gidolim leparot acherot mikadshin heimenu. The second part was set aside just for kohanim gidolim when they needed to make a new para aduma. They needed to be mikadosh themselves, so they used that group. Presumably, there wasn't a lot of people using that second group of afar para aduma. The last group, v'zeh shebichel, that which was kept in an office, Natun lemishmeret migzerat hakatuv. It's not used at all. It's just left there as a remembrance. Sheneemar v'hayta la'adat b'nei Yisrael lemishmeret. Okay, so now you have one third is used regularly to be metahir people. The second third is set aside to be used just by Kohanim Gidolim. And the last third is never used. It's a mishmeret. It's a reminder. It's a remembrance. To what? Let's go further. But presumably at this stage, if you had to say, well, what's the Rambam counting as a mitzvah? I guess you would say the Rambam's counting the part that's left with the mishmarot that's used for regular people, and probably also the part that's left for the Kohanim Gidolim, but not the third part. The third part's not used at all. And the Rambam says, you know, the afar should be mizuman lemashe yitzdarech elav. It has to be kept separate to be used. Okay, so let's leave the Rambam for now. This is a not so satisfying answer, I guess, to our question. Why does the Rambam count the preparatory step? The answer could be because the preparatory step exists independently. There is some need to have this afar paraduma sitting ready, even if it's not used. How do I know? Because a third of the afar paraduma was stored in the chel and was never used. It was just there, lemishmeret. Okay, leave that for now. Let's move on to the whole idea that para aduma is a chok. Where do we get it from? And what does it mean that something is a chok? So there are the two most famous sources that most of us know. I didn't know it was a Yalkut Shimoni and a Medrash Tanchuma, but the story, you know, the source is known. Chazal said as follows in source number 6. Zot chukat ha-Torah, Rabbi Yitzchak Pasach. Rabbi Yitzchak opened and said as follows. Here's a pasuk from Mishlei, I think. I know it's by Shlomo HaMelech. Kol ze, oh, maybe Kohelet. Kol ze nisiti b'chochma, amarti ech kama v'hi rechokam imeni. Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, said, all this I tried to do, I figured out everything. I thought to myself, amarti ech kama, I'm smart, v'hi rechokam imeni. But this thing was beyond me. Amar Shlomo, here's the drasha. Al kol ha-Torah kula amadati. I understood every single part of the Torah. Va'al parsha zo shel para, but with respect to para aduma, kevan shehayiti magia ba, when I got up to it, hayiti doresh ba, choker ba, vishoel ba, I would inquire, I would investigate, I would ask, and I came up empty. Amarti ech kama v'hi rechokam imeni. I said, I'm smart, but para aduma is beyond me. Okay, that's one drasha of Chazal. The other really famous drasha of Chazal involves not Shlomo HaMelech, but Moshe Rabbeinu. The Medrash Tanchuma in source number 7 says, V'yikhu elecha, right, para aduma tmima, Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina Amar, Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu le Moshe. God says to Moshe, Ani migale lecha ta'am para, aval la'acherim chuka. God says to Moshe, I will tell you the secret, the reason behind para aduma, but for everybody else, it must remain a chok. Okay, for everybody else, it must remain a mitzvah that has no explanation. Now, it happens to be that these two medrashim fit in nicely with the two options or the two possibilities as to what a chok is, right? When you hear that something is a chok, how are you supposed to understand it? So there are two fundamental ways that are seen in all the sources in terms of what a chok is, okay? The first one is Rashi. Source number 8, it's strange that this Rashi appears in Sefer Bereishis, but in Sefer Bereishis, God says something that, why do I love Avraham? Because he's going to tell his children, Lishmor mitzvotai chukotai v'torotai. So Rashi says, what's chukotai? He says, Devarim sheyetza hara ve'umot ha'olam mishivin alehen. They are the types of things that the Gentiles and the Yetza hara attack us over. Kegon achilat chazir, eating pork, ulvishat shatnez, wearing wool and linen together. And here's the line. She'ein ta'am bidavar. Literally, there is no explanation. Ela gzeirat hamelech v'chukotav al avadav. Rather, these are commands of the king. They are decrees, and we follow them. Okay, it's not clear if Rashi means it literally, but the literal reading of Rashi is there is no explanation for why we can't eat pork and why we're not allowed to wear shatnez and why we do the mitzvah of para aduma. There's no explanation. Or saying a different way, there is an explanation. What's the explanation? God said so. Okay? It sounds like a funny explanation, but in the end, you know, that's who we are, right? To be religious means I do things because God tells me to do them. It's true. For most of us, we get greater value and greater religious meaning out of a mitzvah that we understand. But there also has to be, a part of us that does mitzvahs even that we don't understand, but simply because God tells us to. Right? If we admitted it to ourselves, we know it's true. All of you, I suppose, still lead lives like this, but and I'm sure it happens to you all the time. But, you know, in a previous life, people would ask me from time to time, like, you know, why do you eat kosher? You know, why this, why that? And in very honest moments, either that because or I didn't want to get into a conversation, I would say, I don't know. You know, God said I can't eat meat and milk together. I don't know why. Which is, of course, another way of saying to somebody, please disrespect me, I'm an idiot. Right? But for religious people, no. That's what it means. It means, I don't know why, but I do it anyway because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me to do it. Okay? That's the first approach. It's quoted in Rashi's name. A chok is a mitzvah that has no reason other than the fact that God told us to do it, which, by the way, constitutes a really, really good reason. The Ramban didn't like that at all. Source number 9. The Ramban says, with respect to chukim, Ve'ein ha'kavana bahem she'tihye gzeirat melech malchei ha'malachim b'shum makom b'lo ta'am. He says, God forbid that there should be any command that God gives us that has no explanation. Okay? The Rambam, more than the Ramban, you know, thinks that the idea that God would ask us to do something without reason is insulting to God. Right? The Rambam's assumption is as follows. He says, you know, if somebody says to you, you know, I don't know, what's the Zoom link for the shiur? So you'll understand that he wants you to give him the Zoom link for the shiur because he needs it for some reason, because there's a value to it. And he says, if you assume rationality with respect to human beings, you should at least assume rationality with respect to God. Why would God ever command us to do something if there was no benefit in it? Okay? That's the Rambam and the Ramban. And now he says why. Ki kol imrat elokat srufa, because God's word is purifying. It's refining. God wants us to be better. That's why he gives us mitzvos. Rak hachukim Hen gzeirat hamelech, but chukim are decrees. Ashe yachok b'malchuto b'li sheyigalet to'al tam la'am. A chok is a command that God has, which has a reason, but God chose not to reveal it. Ve'ein ha'am nehenim bahem, and the people don't really enjoy it as much. Okay, here, if you had to choose, easy examples, if you had to choose between matzah and lulav, so if you're like me, you choose matzah in a second. Why? Because when I eat matzah, I understand that I'm supposed to be re-experiencing slavery in Egypt and Yetzias Mitzrayim. But I'll tell you the truth. When I take a lulav on Sukkos, I have no idea. You know, I can make stuff up, but I don't really understand the mitzvah. And so it doesn't connect to me as much as a mitzvah that I do understand. So says the Ramban, what's a chok? It's a mitzvah with a reason, with a rationale, with a purpose, but we don't know it. And therefore, we're maharher achrayhem belibam. We wonder. Umikablim otam liyirat hamalchut. But in the end, the reason why we do it is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to. V'chein chukei HaKadosh Baruch Hu heim hasodot asher lo batorah she'ein ha'am b'machshavtam nehenim b'hem k'mishpatim. Right? Maybe we don't enjoy it as much as mishpatim because we don't understand them. Aval kulam b'ta'am nachon v'to'elet shlema. But every single mitzvah in the Torah, says the Ramban, has a reason, has a purpose, has a benefit. Now, just so that's the fundamental machlokas. The Rashi seems to be open to the possibility that there are mitzvos that don't have reasons. We do them because God says. The Ramban says, impossible. All mitzvos have reasons, but there are mitzvos, the reasons for which God hides from us. Why? Because he wants us to worship him completely. Right? I always think the definition of a frum person is a person who's willing to do things that he doesn't understand and or that he disagrees with. It's a form of saying, you know, God told me, so I do it. Now, it's true. If we didn't understand any mitzvos, it would be really hard to be frum. But if the balance is such, you know, that it's 85-15, overwhelmingly we understand mitzvos. But every once in a while, we come across a mitzvah that we don't understand. We have to find meaning in those mitzvos we don't understand. And the meaning is, I trust HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, I'm subservient to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not because it fills me with meaning, but because it fills me with meaning. Not the meaning that I understand, but the meaning that I'm willing to do it. Right? Not to get too carried away and not to get me or anybody else in trouble, but I think marriages work that way. Meaning, for the most part, you know, you're on the same page as your wife and the things she wants you to do, you do because they make sense. But every once in a while, there are things that don't make any sense. My socks aren't bothering anybody in the corner of the room. No one's going to slip on them. Okay? But your wife tells you, you know, she wants, it could be that those things that you do that you don't agree with, they're the backbone of your marriage. You know, they're the ones that really matter because they show commitment. The other ones you would have done anyway. And just as an aside, but I'll say this, you know, Rav Lichtenstein talked about many, many times the idea of tameh hamitzvos, whether we're supposed to be, you know, looking at and figuring out the reasons behind mitzvos. And his position was the same. His position was very, very clear. It was the reason for every single mitzvah is because God said so. That's the reason for every single mitzvah. Now, once you understand the reason for every single mitzvah, you certainly have the right to search out the, you know, the deeper reasons, to search out the meaning for you, because it does make the mitzvah more meaningful. But your mitzvah observance cannot be tied to your understanding of mitzvahs. It can't be, God forbid, I eat matzah because I understand that, but I don't take a lulav because I don't understand that one, right? Because they have the same reason. The reason is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to. It happens to be it's easier to connect to matzah than to lulav, perhaps. I'm sure at the end somebody's going to tell me that he loves lulav much more than matzah, and that's fine. He's wrong, but that's fine. Doesn't bother me at all. And it's seen, I'll just say this, the legend is that on Rav Lichtenstein's notebooks in college, on the cover, he used to write, Tuv tam vadas lamdeini ki b'mitzvotecha ha'emanti. And I once heard from Rav Shechter, the pshat in that pasuk, and it's exactly this point. Tuv tam vadat lamdeini, teach me all the secrets and all the deeper meaning of your mitzvos, ki b'mitzvotecha ha'emanti, because I'm doing them already. I believe already. I want to get the answers because it doesn't matter to me. Right? I'm fully committed. I'm doing shatness anyway. I'm doing para aduma anyway. And since I'm doing it anyway, you might as well tell me. Okay. That's the second part. That's the machlokes about what a chok is, the two different ideas, and the two different approaches. Now let's get back to para aduma, the quintessential chok. What makes it so unique? Why is it that everybody talks about para aduma, that Chazal talk about it as this major secret? In a way, frankly, they don't talk about shatness, and they don't talk certainly about lulav and things like that. So on our psukim in Parshas Chukas, Rashi says as follows, and everybody knows, whether you know it's a Rashi or not, everybody's heard this before. Zot chukat ha-Torah, lefi shehasatan ve'umo ta'olam, monin et Yisrael lomar, because the Satan and all the Gentiles attack us, and they say, Maha mitzvah hazot umatam yeshba. What's going on with this para aduma? It seems really weird and really creepy. Lefikach katab bachuka. That's why the Torah said, right? That's why the Torah said, zot chukat haTorah. The Torah itself calls it a chok. Gizeirahi milifanai ve'ein lecha rishut leharher achareha. Rashi says, no, that's my shita. It's a decree. There's no explanation, and you have no right to even wonder about it. God told us to do para aduma, and so we do para aduma. And if anybody asks you why, you tell them the truth. I have no idea. Okay, by the way, I meant to point out before, the two shitos in what a chok is, I think, are seen in the two medrashim, right? Shlomo HaMelech says, Ech kamavi rechoka mimeni. I can't figure it out. The implication, at least in that medrash, is there's no reason. If the smartest person in the world couldn't figure it out, there's no reason. But the medrash Tanchuma says God told the reason to Moshe, but it was a secret. So the second shita, the medrash Tanchuma, lines up nicely with the Ramban. Of course there are reasons, we just don't know them. The Yalkut Shimoni lines up nicer with Rashi, which seems to imply there is no reason. Okay, so Rashi right here, the problem with Rashi's explanation is there are so many other mitzvahs that we don't understand. We don't understand why karbanos are brought. And if the idea is that the para aduma, you know, sprinkling some ashes, how does it turn a person who's impure into a person who's pure? There are other karbanos of zav and yoledes that also turn a person from being tame to being tahar. So what is it that's so unique about para aduma? There are two ideas. They're both quoted by the Sefer HaChinuch in source number 11. They're famous and they're fantastic. Okay, let's just skip or we'll run out of time. Third line after the Das. The Chinuch wants to answer the question of what's so unique about Para Aduma that everybody's so worked up about it. Says the Chinuch, Aval Ikar HaPela Lefima Sheshamati, says the Chinuch. It's not my own. What I've heard is, Al hayota mitaheret hatmeim umitamaha uskim bisreifata. Says the Chinuch, the real mystery of para aduma is the rule that it's mitame tahorim, but mitaher tumeim. In other words, the ish tahar who sprinkles the ashes on the ish tame when he's finished, the ish tahar becomes tameh, and the ish tameh becomes tahar. Says the Sefer, that seems bizarre. And he says there are theories, there are ideas like this in other karbanos, but it's most unique with respect to para aduma, where afaran mitaheret, the exact thing that makes me tahar makes you tameh. Okay? So that's the first thing that's unique about para aduma. That's why it's a chok, because it's not just that it's mitaher, a person who's tameh, but it's that it's mitameh, a person who's tahar. And that doesn't make any sense. Second idea, which the Ramban, this is the Ramban's idea, and the Ramban thinks it's the real thing. He says, no, what's unique about Para Aduma is its location. He says, V'gam ken ha-tema ha-gadol ba, bihiyota na'aseit michutz la-machaneh, shelo kiderech sha'ara karbonot. He says, what's weird about Para Aduma is that it's the only karbon that's brought outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Now, it's not really true. There's one other karbon that's brought outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Anybody know what it is? This would be the class participation time.
Seir Mishtaleach.
Excellent. No, Seir Mishtaleach, right? The Ramban talks about this a lot. The Ramban thinks that one's problematic also. And he says, Va'al davar zem monin ha'umot et Yisrael aleha. That's why the Gentiles attack us. Ki yachshavu shehi nizbechet la'si'irim al pnei hasadeh kimin hagam heim. The Gentiles say, hey, the thing that's unique about Judaism is that you have only one God and you have only one Beit HaMikdash and you have only one way of serving him. But now here's this karbon that you're bringing outside of Yushalayim. You look like us. We do that. We have, you know, ways to sacrifice to our many gods and all these different ways. You're not supposed to have that. The Ramban thinks it's the same problem with the Sa'ir La'Azazel, right? That's brought on Yom Kippur. And the Ramban admits there is something going on there that's weird, but we don't have time to discuss that now. But the Ramban thinks the defining chok in Para Aduma is that it's a karbon that's brought bachutz, which is supposed to be usur. Literally, it's kachim bachutz. Okay, those are the two challenges. Now, the Chinuch can't resist, and this is why we love him. So he wants to suggest some idea that might explain at least one of these questions, and that is the opposite nature, the idea that Para Aduma is metame, people who are tahor, and metar, people who are tame. So he says, va'amnam. The Chinuch says, it's not that weird. Kama trufot bi'isvei ha'adama ubi'ilanot. There are many medicines that come from roots and trees. Min ha'erez ha'shebalavona na'izo ha'shebakir, from little things to big things. Mileim sigulot b'hafachim, that work in opposite ways. Yikararu ha'chamim, they cool down people who are hot. V'yechamamu ha'karim, and they warm up people who are cold. And he goes on to say, V'ilu yadanu mahut ha'nefesh v'shar shal machluta u'briyuta navin b'ulai. If we really understood biology, something we still don't, if we really understood, we know why sometimes things work in opposite ways on different people, right? Ki skulat ha'para gam kein, could be with respect to Para Aduma also. The idea is, lahachli ha'nefesh uletama be'esek ha'srefa v'achrei ha'yata afarkei. Basically, he says, we've had this before. We've seen it in nature. There are things that have opposite reactions. Just take the worst example, right? Nobody says to themselves, hey, you know, chemotherapy cured this person who I know, radiation cured, I'm healthy, but it must help me to have radiation. Of course not, right? If you're healthy, it makes you sick. But if you're sick, it might make you healthy. Most of the vaccinations that we have basically make you sick, you know, a little bit, and then you build up antibodies, right? God willing, bizchus mayafrash aschala, when there's going to be a vaccine for corona, it'll do the same thing. It'll give you the disease in some tiny dose, and then it'll immunize you. So the Chinuch says, you know, I don't know that it's so weird that Para Aduma has opposite effects on different people. Medicines have opposite effects on different people. And there's really something interesting about it. And he wants to say more, but he says, V'ze eino barur lahasig binyan klum. I don't understand all this stuff. Ella, he often apologizes after saying the greatest things. Ella shechibat hakodesh, my love of what's holy, v'hacheshek lahasig yidiya benistar, and my desire to understand secrets, Yanid hakaneh lichtov. Literally, it moves my quill, it moves my pen to write. As if he's saying, you know, I really shouldn't have said any of these things because it's not for me to suggest you know, reasons for secrets of the Torah, but I did, and it's a great reason. This takes us to the last point, and that is our general approach to chukim and how we can approach Parah Aduma, and to be honest with you, mitzvos like it. And so everybody quotes, I'll read it quickly, this Rambam at the end of Hilchos Mikvos, Perek Yudav HaYochud Yudbet, the Rav quotes it, where he says, Davar barur v'galu shehatumot v'taharot gizirot ha-katuv hein. That's the Rambam's way of saying that Tuma and Tahara is not real. It's Gzeres HaKosuv. The Torah made it up. There is no machine that could identify, you know, there's no x-ray machine or scan that could show something is Tahara or Tame. It can't be seen genetically. It can't be seen in a chromosome. It can't be seen in anything. Ve'inan midvarim shedato shel adam machrato v'arein michlal achukim. We don't understand it. It's a chok. Okay? And he says, so is going to mikvah. A chok. Okay? Because Tuma is not dirt that you can wash away in a mikvah. It's a gzeres hakasuv. But then he says, v'hadavar talui b'kavanat halev. Nah, but it's all dependent on our desire to become tahor. And therefore, Chazal said, taval v'lo hichzik ki'ilu lo taval. A person who went to mikvah, but he didn't intend and didn't desire to become tahor, it doesn't work. People quote this Rambam, and it's a worthwhile Rambam to hold on to and to look at later, as basically saying there's such a thing as a chok, and nevertheless, we can find meaning in chukim. And Rav Soloveitchik in particular genuinely believed strongly that the more we could find reason and meaning in a chok, the better off we'll be. And it doesn't even have to be, I don't know if I'm quoting accurately now, but it doesn't even have to be true. It could just be the meaning that you find in it. But that's a value. And the Rav has a piece, if anybody wants to look it up, you can. It's in the volume called Man of Faith in the Modern World, Volume 2. Starts on page 100. It's also, he spoke about it many times. He has a theory for Parah Aduma, which I want to share with you. That's the last thing we're going to do. I think it's amazing. I think it's staggering. And it takes us in many, many directions. Okay? Says the Rav, what's the chok here? And here he suggests something amazing. He says, Zot Chukat HaTorah, the chok is not Parah Aduma. Parah Aduma is just a mitzvah. You know what the chok is? The chok is death. Look at 13. Zot HaTorah Adam Ki Yamut Be'ohel. Says the Rav, Chukat HaTorah is the Torah that introduced death into the world. As an aside, you know, I've heard many smart people say that briskers were obsessed with death. That's why, like in Reb Chaim, there are so many more pieces on like Tumas Meis than on Sukkah and Pesach. Like they just spent their time learning halachas about death. And it was probably true about the Rav also. And he was very, very open, and he wrote many things and spoke about it openly. I think there was a year where he lost his mother, his wife, and his brother. And, you know, he just had a lot of thoughts and a lot of Torah on death. And he said, the chok, right? The thing that we'll never understand, the thing that we'll never be able to cure is Adam Ki Yamut Be'ohel, is death, right? He says, you know, for a rational person, death mocks us. Because we know that no matter what plans we have and no matter what preparations we take, you know, death interrupts everything. And it can't be solved and it's not going to be fixed. And he makes the point also that in Judaism, let's admit it, death is bad. Right? It's not like other religions where, oh, we died, that's great, you could be in heaven. No. The action takes place on earth. Mitzvos and personal growth and these things take place on earth. And therefore, says the Rav, you know, death is bad and death is depressing. And he says all types of tuma, every type of tuma, can be traced to something like death. Okay? You know, Zav and Zava and Yoledet, they're flows that come out of you that could have been a child that represents some form of, you know, almost death. Tsaras is your body's decomposing, right? Coming in touch with a sheretz or a nevela, right? These are ugly things, right? We just had a dead cat next to our house. Nobody wants to go near a dead cat. It's terrifying. It's scary. Okay? He says, if that's true for all those other things, tumas mace is much worse, right? The death of an animal, said the Rav, is not a tragedy. Okay, yeah, if it's your pet, you know, it's sad, but animals are animals. The death of a human being, says the Rav, is depressing. It's an olam male that was just destroyed. You know, it's dreams and hopes and plans and everything. It's depressing and it's not solvable by us, right? We might help make life longer, but we're not going to fix death. And so there are two ways that a person can become tahar. For the most part, the way you become tahar is by going to mikvah. Okay? What does it mean to go to mikvah? It's something you do on your own. Okay? It's your personal decision. You know, you go in, you bow down, you make sure that you're all covered by water, you come out, you're reborn. Okay? But it's a decision you make on your own, and it's something you do by yourself. And that covers every single type of tumah except for contact with the dead human body. Tumas meis, says the Rav, can't be fixed by mikvah. It needs somebody else. It needs an ish tahar to sprinkle something on you. He says in psychological terms, it's so painful that you're not going to get it. You're not going to fix it on your own. You need somebody to help you. That could be, the Rav doesn't say this, I don't think, but that could be why Chazal say, ish tahar, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You need something else when you're profoundly depressed. You need somebody else to help pull you out of it because you're not going to get there on your own. So now you ask yourself the obvious question, great, then why do you need both, right? Why does a person who's tamei meis have to go to mikvah and also have somebody else sprinkle afar para aduma on him? And the answer is, and this is really amazing, it's true that we can't defeat death. But the Rav thought it's still our job to fight it. And so you have to go to mikvah. That's your part of it, right? That's humanity's obligation. That's why we have to find a cure to COVID, and we have to find cures for all other diseases, and we have to keep doing medical research because it's our obligation to try to perfect the world. But we're not going to cure death. Even if we extend life, we're not going to cure death. So the Rav saw symbolically, going into a mikvah is, you can't just say, well, everybody dies, so I'm going to give up. You have to do your part, which is going into a mikvah, but afterwards you need somebody else's help or God's help to help you pull out of your depression. But both parts are critical and both parts are necessary. And that brings us to the question we asked at the beginning, which is, what in the world is the Parsha of Para Aduma doing after the rebellion of Korach and before the death of Moshe, before the death of Miriam and Aaron? And answers the Rav, these are the 38 missing years in the Torah. Okay, the way it works is as follows. And don't think that you weren't paying attention and you missed an aliyah and so you lost it all. It's not there. Okay? In Shlach, you have the Chet HaMeraglim, and God decrees 40 years in the Midbar. Then you have some mitzvos that remind us we will eventually get into the land, but you have the mitzvos, and then you have the rebellion of Korach. Okay? And then the next narrative you have is the death of Miriam. That goes from year 2 to year 40. Nothing happened in 38 years in the Torah. There were no communications from God. There were no revelations. There was just radio silence. And so the Rav says, and this I think is amazing, the Torah put Chukas, Para Aduma, as the place saver for those 38 years. You know what happened for 38 years? Death. people had to wait to die from year two when we sinned with the Meraglim and God told us, you're not going in. Anybody who sinned with the Meraglim is not going in. All those people just waited around to die. And so right after Para Aduma, we have the following. Source 14. Vayavou b'nei Yisrael kol ha'edam midbar tzin b'chodesh harishon. Vayeshev ha'am b'kadesh. Vatamat sham Miriam v'tikaver sham. Miriam dies. Why does it say kol ha'eda? Rashi says, Eda ha'shlema, the full Klal Yisrael. Why? Shekfar meitu meitei midbar ve'elu pershu l'chaim. Because the people who had to die already died, and the people who are now left, they are the people who are going to go into the land of Israel. So this is the 40th year. What happened for 38 years? Para Aduma, just death. And that's why the Torah puts it there, because that's all that happened, just death. Now, come back to the last question we asked. What's the mitzvah, if the Rav is right, and, you know, he doesn't need my endorsement, but I think so. You know, what's the mitzvah of Para Aduma? What's the Rambam counting as his mitzvah? So we thought originally that having the Afar Para Aduma available is a mitzvah itself. Isn't that just a preparatory stage of the mitzvah? I don't know. People say what they say. But I think the answer is no, that's not what the Rambam means. The Rambam says, V'hayta la'adat b'nei Yisrael l'mishmeret. The purpose is to have Afar Para Aduma, not to use it. Remember we said it was split into thirds? I think the one the Rambam cares about most is the third that wasn't used, that was stored in the chayal. Now, what's the point of a mishmer? Well, the answer is, it exists. It exists in other places, okay? The Torah says, Vayom Moshe al Aaron, 15, Kach tzin senet achat v'ten shama meloha omer man, take a Tupperware and put man in it, v'hanach oto lifnei Hashem l'mishmeret l'dorotechem. And put it in the Kodesh. Put it in the Kodesh HaKodeshim next to the Aron. And it will be a Mishmeret. It will be a remembrance. You could take it out when you want to remember it. This week's parasha for you. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe Hashevet Matei Aron Lifnei Adud L'Mishmeret. Right? It's a big contest. Everybody puts in a staff. Take Aron's staff, the winning one that flowered, and put it in the Adud L'Mishmeret. It's a remembrance. It's something that you look at and remember. And I think the Rambam says there's a mitzvah to make Afar Para Aduma. For what purpose? To see that we're struggling against death. To see that there's something that we can't solve, but we can't wash our hands of either. And I think that's the explanation why it's not in the Beit HaMikdash. Because you want everybody to be part of it. You want it to be seen in a place where, let's face it, when I go to the Beit HaMikdash, I see only life, and I'm unlikely to sin. But outside of the Beit HaMikdash, I see death, and I sin all the time. And I think, in the end, the value of Para Aduma and the value of Afar Para Aduma in the Rambam is not its functionality. It's true that Afar Para Aduma is Mitaher Tumeim and makes a person who's Tamei Meis, makes him Tahar. And that's an amazing thing, but that's another mitzvah. I think what the Rambam is saying, there's another mitzvah to deal with death, to understand the challenge of death, to understand that we're supposed to relate to it, and to know that God is part of that challenge. And that God said, you don't have to understand it because you never will. But here's a process that will help you, if not to overcome death, of course, to deal with it. And that's Afar Para Aduma, and that's the greatest chok in the Torah. It's the greatest chok in the Torah because we know we'll never solve it. But it's the greatest chok in the Torah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help us to solve it as much as we can. And when you think about it, and we don't have time for this, but, you know, death was introduced into the world by sin, right? By Adam and Chava. Who knows what the plan would have been otherwise? And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduced death into the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us that one day, B'bi'as Goel Tzedek, death will go away. But until then, he, as part of the process of Para Aduma, will help us cope. That's all I got. Shabbat shalom to everybody. Have a great, great week.
Ellie, just 1 second before everybody signs off. First of all, Ellie Shkayach. Just a tremendous hakaras hatov. It's my mother's yard site tomorrow, and I just want to express hakaras hatov specifically to Ellie because, and also I guess I have to mention Yitzchak Belzon, Shemitem and Rani, that you know really gave me the schluss to be mechabing my parents because they made Teaneck a place where they wanted to come to. And
mostly me, Henry.
And most, it's actually true because they came.
Okay, I'm joking, Henry. Stop.
No, it was they heard Ellie's davening and they started to come Yantif,
right.
And then for all the last years of their life,
okay.
They started to come to us every Shabbos, which I thank my wife.
It was Mindy.
They really gave me the ability to.
Now you're gonna make Mindy get angry at me.
But right. they really gave me the ability to be Muhammad, my parents,
okay.
On the highest level. So a tremendous hakaras hatov to the community, to the specific people who really gave this ability to me, and to my wife, who really was really mechabed them for their whole life. And it's my first time not being in Eretz Yisrael in 9 years on one of my parents' yard sites. So Ellie's been there at my house in Israel, every yard site. So it's a big schluss to share this, you know, with the community. Shkoch to everybody and to Ellie.
All right.
Thank you. Great job.
Neshama Shabbos.
Thank you. Good job.